3, Side 1. Continuing our interview with Ivan J. Novick, this is Ruth Weiner, together with her comrade, Bess Corellis. This is January 14th, 1998. Mr. Novick, as we look back on our notes, we see that we didn't ask you about your current life, your marriage now. Would you like to tell us about that?
Certainly. I first met Mary when she became, I was employed as administrative assistant to Paul Flax, who was the executive director and subsequently the executive vice president of the Zionist Organization of America. And she worked with Paul. Whenever I went to the Zionist Congress, I think it was December of 1982, my assistant, Kathy Branch, had illness in the family. One of the children was ill, and she couldn't accompany me. And I chaired the political committee of the Congress at that time, which is a key committee of the Congress, which the chairman reports directly to the prime minister almost on a daily basis. And it was the first time that I recognized or learned that a Zionist Congress, a Jewish prime minister, not only wants to be the head of the state of Israel, but he also wants to be the head of the Congress. So he's always very interested in knowing what's happening on a daily basis. So Kathy was, one of her children was ill, and Paul Flax asked me if I would be willing to accept his assistant to help me while we were in Israel, because it was about a 19-20 day involvement and very intense every day. And I said fine, and that was when I got to know Mary a little bit. And when I came home, so Natalie had passed away in July of 1982. And when I came home that Friday at the end of December, my son Howard was going to get engaged, and Kathy Branch, my assistant in New York, had the ring. So we got back on a Friday, and I went to the Drake Hotel where I usually stay, and I went to sleep, and I, for whatever the reason, I didn't wake up, and the phone rang, and Howard called me from Rossini's restaurant on 56th Street. He says, "Dad, where are you? I have Cindy here, and I don't have the ring." So I never showered and shaved so quickly in my life, and I went up the street and delivered the ring to Howard, and he and Cindy became engaged. So the next night, I was so appreciative of the hours that Mary put in Israel that I thought it would be a nice thing to take her to dinner with Howard and Cindy, who were going to dinner that Saturday night. And I invited her, and I subsequently found out later from her that she was so tired she really didn't want to go, but she did go, and she met Howard and Cindy, and that was really the substance of it at that time. And I asked Mary actually to go out for dinner in April of 1983, and that was the first time that we had a, what you would call, an official date. And she came to Pittsburgh in October of 1983, and we were married subsequently, and so far have lived happily ever after.
84. In Pittsburgh in October 84. No, 83.
Yeah, 83. Yeah, she came in October 83. And she's just a wonderful person, and what's so unique is how she became so close to my mother-in-law, Natalie's mother, Libby. They became, over a period of time, it didn't happen immediately, but over a period of time they became so close. And
it's beautiful.
And they, Mary was on, was like a daughter to her. And it was very meaningful within the family. And after a period of time, she became very close to my children. But you know, naturally, those things don't happen in 15 minutes, but it did happen because of her unique personality and her ability to be, just to be such a nice, friendly person. So she's added a great dimension to our entire family, and I believe you both know my Aunt Sylvia, Mrs. Brown, who lives at the Park Plaza, and she's going to be 90 years young in December, and Mary is the chairperson of the event.
That's lovely.
She and Aunt Sylvia have become so close. They just talk 2-3 times a day, and Mary just returned today. She just had her at the doctor's today. She took her there, and Aunt Sylvia is just a remarkable woman. We're very fortunate that Mary is such an important and meaningful part of our family.
It sounds beautiful. May there be many, many years together.
Thank you.
I think we've covered personal life very nicely.
Mm-hmm. May I just add one thing?
Oh, please, yes.
If I may. What I think also is very unique, that which says something, says a great deal. I'd say that 75% of the friends that I had during my first marriage are still my close friends during my second marriage, which of course is a tribute to Mary, because they're all very fond of her. And
that is a tribute.
And my favorite story concerns my friend Jack Goldsmith, who you may know, and Jack was over for dinner one evening a couple of years ago, and he was lying on the couch, and he had a sort of an ache in his back, and Mary was sort of massaging his back muscles. And he turned to me and he said, "You know, Ivan," he said, "there are some people that have said you've done a couple things in your lifetime." He said, "We've been friends for a lifetime." He said, "But truly and truly, you haven't impressed me that much." He said, "But any guy that can bring home two ladies like you have in one lifetime, there must be something to you." So I took that as a compliment.
It's a tribute to you.
Yeah.
Indeed. I have here in front of me, as you may see, a list of your volunteer activities starting in 1959. And just for the record, I kind of itemized the organizations from 1959 to 1983, in which you held some important offices. United Jewish Federation, think of this, Road of Sholem, Phi Epsilon Pi, Isra Bonds, the Jewish Family and Children's Service, Jewish Community Center, American Jewish Committee, ZOA, Technion, Community Relations Council, Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged, School for Advanced Jewish Studies, Jewish National Fund, the World Jewish Congress, United Fund, Joint Distribution Committee, National Conference on Soviet Jewry, American Israel Public Affairs Committee, and the Tel Aviv University, Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and Yeshiva University. That's quite a list. Is there anything there that you want to comment about on the things that occurred in those years that you think is memorable and noteworthy?
Well, I was very fortunate as a relatively young man. I had as a business partner a gentleman whose name may be known to you, David Lowenthal. And David was approximately, I think, 6 years older than I am. But at that time in your life, it seems like a lot of years. Well, it really isn't. And David was veteran of the Haganah, and also had served on the Exodus, and he and I became business partners, and I had won a company called San Toy Money Company in a proxy fight, and I had merged it with Apollo Industries, which was his company. He also had a partner named Morton Chatkin, and we put the companies together, and we went public, and But David was very, very involved in Jewish life at that time. And through him, I met Bob Hiller, who at that time was the executive director of the United Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh, and also Alvin Rogel, who was a member of our board. And they asked me to become involved in the local scene, and through David, I became involved on the national scene. In 1960, I was one of the charter members of, well, I was one of the founding members, is a better word, of the Young Leadership Cabinet of the United Jewish Appeal. There were 10 of us. And we hoped that our founding father was Rabbi Herbert Friedman, who was the executive vice chairman of the United Jewish Appeal. And we hope to celebrate his 80th birthday in October in New York. There's a group of us putting together a function for that purpose, which we just discussed it about a week ago. And I had the good fortune of being introduced to all of these individuals at a rather young age, and my business career had sort of moved in a positive direction, and I was in a corporate arena that was that gave me a lot of exposure. So before I knew it, I was very much involved in the United Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh, as well as the United Jewish Appeal throughout the country. And so I held leadership positions in the in those organizations, beginning actually in, I guess it was really the late 50s.
1959.
Yeah, I think I was chairman of the campaign, young adult campaign, and the board in 59-60. So I had begun rather early, because I'd met Bob Hiller, I think, actually in 1957-1958, and then the rest just followed. And one activity led to another, and I was very fortunate to be married to a woman who understood my need for to be involved and to participate in these activities, and try to lend whatever assistance or expertise that I could. And it becomes a way of life. And as I say, one involvement leads to another, and there is an old adage that says, you know, if you want to get something done, ask a busy man. Well, then there might be something true to that. And I certainly was very involved. But I always make one statement, and it's true, it's not just a phraseology. You get much more out of it than you give, no matter how much you give. And the relationships, feeling of accomplishment, the ability to be part of the process is something you never dreamed could ever happen in your life. And but as I say, what you get out of it is much more than what you put into it, no matter how involved you are. And I think if you ask anybody else who's had the same kind of life, I'm sure you're hearing that on the tape again and again.
Our list ends in 1983. Things in 1983 starts with chairman of the board of ZOA. Do you want to start with this and tell us what happened from 1983 on, so far as ZOA is concerned, and then we'll go down the here.
Well, I 1983 from 1983 to 1988. I was chairman of the board of the ZOA, and what happened was that my successor, Alec Resnick from Baltimore, wonderful gentleman, who succeeded me, his son-in-law, Alec is a lawyer, and he had a title company, and his son-in-law, during the period of time he was second in command of the ZOA, as chairman of the National Executive Committee, had built this company to a much higher level, and it necessitated Alec, where he thought he'd be spending less time in his practice, he had to spend considerably more time And he asked me at that time if I would stay on as chairman of the board and actually continue almost to run the organization as I did as the president. And I agreed to do that. And so therefore I actually, as I say, served as almost as the president, not in his place because he still was very involved, but I did take a great deal of responsibility during that period of time. So all of the things that I did from 78 to 1983 for the Zionist organization, when I was its president for 4 years, 7 months, and 23 days, I continued to do as the chairman of the board. During that period of time, I was very active in the World Zionist Organization. As a member of the Zionist Actions Committee, as an executive of the World Union of General Zionists, on the board of the United Israel Appeal, as you noted earlier, I spent a great deal of time on the Executive Committee of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, and I was the vice chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations in 1980 to 1982, and I continued to serve and be an active member of the Conference of Presidents, actually through that period of time. It was also about that period of time that I assumed the chairmanship of the Board of Governors of Tel Aviv University, and that was a rather involved procedure. That happened at the request of Rabbi Herbert Friedman, who after he left the UJA became the president of American Friends of Tel Aviv University. That was a professional job, and I was the leader. He asked me if I would consider becoming the chairman, which I accepted, and it was a very wonderful experience. I'm still active in the university and many of its activities. So I more or less stayed very involved on the national scene. I chaired the Goodman Institute, which was the Goodman family in New York had established an Israel Diaspora Institute under the aegis of the Zionist organization. I chaired that for a number of years. And so I continued to be involved primarily on a global scale or national scale, more than I was involved on the local scene, where I had completed my board's involvement and my chairmanships and my officerships within the majority of the local organizations.
I was interested in knowing that your involvement or your understanding of the kind of split within Pittsburgh's Zionist Organization of America.
Well, I was very involved in the process in this respect. There was a period of about 2 or 3 years after the election of Morton Klein to succeed Jim Schiller as president of the National President of the Zionist Organization of America. It was the first time in the history of the organization that an incumbent was not re-elected.
That is unusual.
Jim Schiller lost by 16 votes, my guess is out of about 400 to 500 cast. So it was a very close election. A number of ex-presidents, including myself, remained neutral at the convention. Some did support both candidates. There were two or three of us that decided to remain, neutral on the subject. There was, I believe, two things that happened. One, I believe there was a true ideological difference. The incumbent felt that you should support the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, no matter what. Otherwise, you were not, it wasn't right to disagree with anything that the state did. You were an advocate of the state in this country, and you wasn't your role to advise them that they made errors or mistakes and so forth. That was one point of view. And that was the point of view of the Sher administration. Now, I would say the organization was almost split down the middle, in that there was another group that felt that you had a right to responsibly disagree. You had that Israel was not just a state for Israel, it was a state for the Jewish people throughout the world. And therefore that you had the right to offer your input and your opinions, and state if you disagreed. Now, one of the key issues was, how do you disagree? And I had always stated that you, during my administration, that you didn't have to disagree in the New York Times and you, or the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Everybody had access to Israeli leadership. That was the way to do it. There were others that felt that you should voice your opinion, you know, in the press and so forth. I was always the one who was not in favor of that. And so the interesting part is that when Netanyahu came in, it would have been interesting, and what I tried to accomplish, I'm ahead of my story, I'm going to go back, but at the time of the split, if they would have waited, if Pittsburgh Zionist District and or the Zionist Organization of Pittsburgh, which those that the insurgents, we might say, those who went out, if they would have waited 1 week or 2 weeks till after the Israeli election to state their to move in the direction they did, I often wondered what would have happened, because then Netanyahu won, would they have turned around, and when they supported Peres, would they have turned around and said, we support Netanyahu? I don't know. It's a question that I ask myself. I wish the opportunity would have arisen, because I believe that if they would have waited, I think it was 2 weeks, not 1 week, they would have waited 2 weeks until the Israeli election, I don't believe the split would have ever happened. I believe they would have realized that here the players changed and they had to respect the new administration, and I believe they would have, because the same group of people that left certainly supported Mr. Begin and Mr. Shamir in their administrations, and I think they would have supported Mr. Netanyahu, and I think cooler heads would have prevailed. Now, going back at the beginning of the time, I excuse the self-reference and possible lack of humility, but I believe that I was an important force in keeping peace in our family here for a period of about 2 to 3 years. About 2 years, I'd say, yeah, it was. And I had assisting me every inch of the way Zalman Shapiro, who was very much involved in the national scene. Zalman, during my presidency, was extremely helpful to me during that period of time. And he and I fought a very lonely, it wasn't really a battle. I must say, in deference to all the people involved, that I had the opportunity to state my positions, make my points, and everybody seemed to go along for an extended period of time. But finally, another issue came in, and this is, it's a fact. It became a personality situation between the national president and members of the Pittsburgh Zionist community. A true personality problem. And so when people ask me, they say, well, it must have been only one or the other. It wasn't. It was a combination of ideology and a combination of the personal matter.
This was Mr. Schiller?
No. Mr. Klein.
Mr. Klein.
Yeah, Mr. Schiller's successor.
I see, Mr. Klein, mm-hmm. And some of the people from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, right. That was really what took place. You know, it's always easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, even when it involves the Steelers. But I can tell you that some of the people who have left, and they're happy they left, they formed, as you know, the Bnei Zion chapter here in Pittsburgh, and I've been a member of Bnei Zion for many years, and they do wonderful work, It's a non-political organization, but it has wonderful projects in Israel, and they were always noted for their insurance program also. But they've been around for many, many years, and I'm sure that the leadership that left the Pittsburgh Zionist District will be very effective as leaders in, you know, in the B'nai Zion organization chapter here in Pittsburgh. But it's unfortunate. I must say, to go back, Zalman and I were sort of just two voices in the wind at the time, and then finally at the time of the final vote, which has always been held in dispute, and the reason, if you know, that it went to the Beit Din, the whole issue, and the Pittsburgh Zionist District, the original Zionist District, was upheld in all of the issues by the rabbis in the Beit Din. And they ruled that the Pittsburgh, the Zionist organization of Pittsburgh, the group that left, had not adhered to certain principles that they should have, and the Beit Din. I was not a participant in the Beit Din. I got some very good advice from two nice people. One was Constant Schwartz, executive director of the Pittsburgh Zionist District, and the other was Robert Shapiro, a good friend. And both said that as a former national president of the Zionist Organization of America, that I had to take the middle road. I really couldn't side with either side once the vote was taken. And the vote that was taken, if you may recall, I think it was 32 to 16. But that was only the vote of the executive committee. And one of the issues was, how can you vote to disassociate just with an executive committee making the decision without the total membership having an opportunity to participate? And that was one of the issues that they were found wanting in, and I believe that Beit Din upheld the fact that it should have been the total membership, should have been a part of this. I want to reiterate to the record that, you know, I number among those that left some of the closest friends I've ever had in my life before and still. And I respect the fact that they wanted to go their own way. I would have liked it not to have happened. I think the community has been weakened, although I must give great credit to those that remained. They've worked very hard to bring the Pittsburgh Zionist District back to a higher level. I think they've succeeded to a great extent. They have very fine leadership of Dr. Seth Corey, and Dr. Shapiro has also been very much involved. And they have an executive director. I think they were very fortunate. I think Richard Fox that became involved. He's a very talented man. And I'm sure it's been a very difficult struggle, but they appear to have made great strides. They had a dinner for the first time in a couple of years this past year, which I attended along with others. And they had some 350 or 400 people in attendance. And it was a great success. They continue to, you know, to try to do their thing. And but as I say, it was a difficult split within the community, and I think it left its scars, and hopefully they're going to heal as we go forward. So I belong to both organizations, more active in ZOA. They have the Zionist Organization of Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh Zionist District, has continued to honor the programs that were in existence at our previously when the group was together. And there are two very important projects there. One is the American Zionist Fund Dinner, where the Community Service Award is named in honor of my former wife, Natalie, it's in her memory. And it's a very significant honor that's given to a community leader. Majority of times it's been given to a woman. And it seems that many of those, Natalie was a chairman of the women's division of the United Jewish Federation. And many of her girlfriends have received this award over the years. And but this past year, you may recall, Dan Frankel, who I received the award, the Nellie Novick Award. So, and I remember Lester Hamburg received it. So it's not unknown for a man to receive it, but most of the time it's been many ladies that you know very well. And in addition to that, we have a scholarship program in Nellie's memory, where we award scholarships at the annual meeting every year, and that continues to be part of the program. And so, you know, there are reasons and rationale and commitments and love of the organization that certainly keeps the Novick family, you know, involved in this organization. And I hope I've answered your question.
From the ideological split, the ZOA position now is that it speaks its mind or it supports?
Well, I think it does both.
It does both.
It both supports and certainly supports the government of Israel, but also speaks its mind.
End of tape 3, side 1.
Not publicly. That is a 100% factor. There are when they speak publicly, ordinarily they